All right.
There will be Blue Jays baseball tonight across the network.
I had to mow yesterday because there was no game. Dandy. Boy, I tell you. I don't know why they're keeping me up at night, Jeff.
What?
The dandelions.
I don't either.
They are.
Welcome to...
They're irritating me.
Welcome to the life
of... I don't like it.
Welcome to the life of a homeowner.
But I'm getting... Oh, they won't beat me, Jeff.
Dandelions. As a homeowner, dandelions are going to be the least of your worries. Trust me.
Part of
it's the stuff you can't get rid of that ends up... ends up being an issue. It is Blair and Barker. This is Tuesday. And the Jays will open a very brief two-game series against the Philadelphia Phillies. Alek Manoah on the mound tonight against Aaron Nola. Phillies manager Rob Thompson, pride of Corunna, Ontario, will join us at 10:30. Yes, he is. Friend of the show. Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer. Is tonight the night Alek Manoah finds a slider?
That's a great question.
Does he have to do to find his slider, Kevin Barker?
That is a better question.
That's why I asked it.
Man, hitters are hitting 379 off his slider. Hasn't been real good. And you would think that just by him throwing strike one would help. But when he throws strike one, hitters are hitting 333 off it. His strike one percentage is down 2 or 3%. So it's almost, if you do, you get hit. If you don't, you throw more pitches in an at-bat. You throw more pitches in an inning. You don't go as deep in a game as you want to. Look, the slider, for me, I don't think it's mechanical anymore. I think he's gotten to where the finish is better. He's not falling off to the first base side as much as he was at the beginning of the season. Doesn't look like he's trying to force velocity, which is a good thing, which that will have it tunnel a little bit longer because the velocity's there. It'll break where he wants it to break. That is the million-dollar question. I know the people that I've talked to around him, it's more of a feel thing. For whatever reason, the grip just hasn't felt right for him. Coming off the fingers doesn't feel right. He's throwing different pitches because of it. That's why you're seeing righty on righty changeups. I mean, it's gotten to the point. Did you ever think that Alek Manoah, finishing third in the Cy Young last year, dominating righties, sinker, slider away, would have to throw righty on righty changeups? Not me. That would have been the last pitch that I would have thought he would have been throwing.
I didn't think he'd have to get that cute.
This is the first time that I think you've asked me a question. I'm not sure they have an answer for it. I don't have an answer either. Look, optics-wise, it looks like he's okay. It's just you can tell. In a slider count... Now, it's the obvious thing when he wants to throw a slider. Like, he'll throw a good sinker into a righty, which all year the fastball command and the sinker just hasn't been great. And that, for me, has been because he has been standing a little too tall at release point, and the velocity and the mechanics and just the location has been sort of all over the map. But those slider counts, right? He'll throw a good sinker, and that's when you throw the slider. You can actually see him thinking it. Like, you could just see it. He's on the mound just thinking, okay, if I do it here, I land here, I release it here, it's better go here because it was going there when I was in the pen. Why is it not going there? This is the first time you've asked me a question on this show, and I really don't think I have an answer for you. And to my credit, I don't think they do either.
The last outing, I guess the thing that concerned me more than anything else about the last outing.
103 pitches in 5 innings. That's the one thing that concerned me.
But what also concerned me is the lack of swings or misses. It was the third time in his career he had 5 or fewer. It was the fourth time in his career he got no swings and misses on a slider.
That's not good.
That to me more than anything else. You know, I understand the numbers hitting against the slider and all that, but the fact that the people just aren't missing it or aren't swinging at it or it's not getting called for strikes, that really concerns me.
It's a lot of what you just mentioned there. The quality of his stuff as a whole. I mentioned to you, his strike one percentage is down. When he does throw a strike, they're hitting 333 off it. With 2 strikes, They're hitting 247. He's given up 20 hits. You would think most pitchers want to be ahead in the count. That's what everybody preaches, right? The sooner you're ahead in the count, that puts that hitter on the defensive side. You can expand. He will expand. The quality of your stuff doesn't always have to be great. When he is ahead in the count, Jeff, hitters are hitting 273 off him. Odd, right? I think it just gets back to the quality of all of his stuff. It is his slider, but it's not just his slider. It's the command of the fastball. It's 0-0 when you walk to the plate and with two strikes. The quality of 0-0 has to be better. The quality of two strikes has to be better. The two strikes is more of the slider. The 0-0 is more of the sinker command, the fastball command, and maybe two lefties. Lefties are hitting 288.
He didn't complete six innings for the fifth time in seven starts this year. Last year, there were only six starts where he didn't go at least six innings. Look, we've got an off day coming up. Not just yesterday was an off day. There's an off day Thursday, and then the Braves are in town. By the way, the Braves put Max Fried on the IL.
That's
last night. I don't know if he was scheduled to face it just anything, but it doesn't matter. Second time he's gone in the IL this year. That's just a sidebar, though. What happens if he scuffles tonight? I keep bringing this up. You've got that off day. I don't know. Can you play some games with it? Do you play some games against it?
Would the extra day help him?
I'm just throwing stuff out there. I don't know.
Maybe adjust routines. I mean, I'll have to ask around. I haven't asked that. That's something that they're, you know.
But you're right. He looked to the eye. The mechanics looked better in that last start.
It did. The finish was better. It's just when he needs to throw the pitch that everybody knows he needs to throw, he's thinking about throwing it. When you're thinking about throwing it, that means you're thinking about something to get it to go where you want it to go. And normally think wrong. It's everybody on a field, whether you're playing defense, running the bases, hitting, or trying to throw a baseball where you want it to go. It's all sort of ends up the same way. I'm not saying he can't turn this thing around and be really good, but it's obviously something he's thinking about. This is just me. I think he's fixed the mechanical thing. Again, early in the season, he was a little too tall. When you're a little too tall, you don't get it out front. The velocity goes down a little. The break on the secondary stuff is just not as good. You tend to get hammered because you're leaving stuff on the middle of the play. He doesn't throw 99. This is where the 99 hurts him, right? It's okay. Occasionally, it's like Shane McClanahan. You watch him yesterday. I mean, it's middle. It's middle down. It's middle up. Like he ain't trying to trick nobody. It's outer third, inner third. It ain't on the corners because it's 99. He's left-handed. It moves a little bit. Yeah, it's. It's not that with Alek Manoah, right? So he has to be in certain locations. He has to have late movement. He has to have the late movement on the secondary pitches, or you see him throwing changeups to righties. So scoring first, I think, will help him. I think that's one of the keys for him is score first, take a little pressure off of him. Maybe he can think, aim bigger. And again, too, I think a lot of this, now with Kirky, I think Kirky needs to step up his game. Let's say it like it is. I think you're going to be the everyday guy with Alek Manoah. Alek Manoah's going through some things, okay? You notice that it's not okay to set up on the black away to a lefty. His misses have been big. You miss big, you go deeper in counts. Maybe you need to set up outer third instead of on the black, right? You shouldn't need a coach to tell you these things. That's what I'm saying. That relationship back and forth with Kirky needs to be better. Don't have Alek trying to do everything. Help him out a little bit. So I think they'll make enough adjustments to figure out ways to be better 0-0, the quality of his stuff, be better with two strikes, maybe be better with lefties. I mean, he'll probably get four lefties tonight in that Phillies lineup. He'll have to be good. Throw enough changeups to make the slider better, to make the fastball command better because the separation with his changeup has gotten a little bit better. He'll be all right if they score first. I think they'll be fine. The day off, you're walking away sometimes helps a little bit too. So,
Bryce Harper will likely be in the lineup today. We will talk to Rob Thompson about him. Kevin, are we making a big enough deal about what this dude is doing?
I don't think so.
I understand Tommy John surgery is not a pitcher. I know people are saying that. But it looks like he's got a nuclear weapon on his arm to protect himself when he's out there. He's, what, 6-for-19? He's got his home run.
I mean, it looks like he's a little wider at times with his lower half. I mean, he's trying to he's not.
That's trying. He's got to compensate for the arm somehow.
I don't think he does anymore.
Or the elbow?
Maybe he does, but he just sure doesn't seem like he is to me. Like
he would have made that adjustment anyhow. You think
he's doing that because he hasn't had a spring training. He didn't go rehab.
Right.
He's doing the lower half thing because the ball's moving all over the place on him. That's the only reason. I don't think it has anything to do with his arm. Like I really don't. I think he's a freak. I just think some people are just born that way, and he's one of them. Like, he's just one of those people that I'm going to heal quicker than you are because I'm an elite dude, and I'm going to go out and do things that you can't do just because I can do them. I really think that it comes down to that, for hopefully for the Philly's sake, and I'm going to say this, hopefully for me being a baseball fan's sake, nothing happens to him that hinders him going forward, which means he'll miss a lot more time, because I would think that would be the worry, right, is if he really screws it up and he has to miss a lot more
surgery.
Time.
He's had surgery. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I have no idea, but you would think, right? That's why you're protecting it, wearing that all that stuff on your elbow and on your arm. And it would, for me anyway, it would be something little. Because he likes to run all over the place. He likes to show off a little bit because he's an elite athlete, diving all over the place.
He has always enjoyed being a superstar.
And he plays hard.
He really does.
He plays hard. Yeah. Lead by example guy. I hope nothing happens to him. He's an elite guy. He does things that a lot of left-handed hitters can't do, and it's fun watching him, and I hope he stays on the field all the time. I'm glad he's back, but I'm worried about him. Like, I'm worried that something would happen that we don't get to watch him every single day.
So I guess we'll wait before game time, obviously, to find out about Vladdy Jr. He missed two games with that left wrist issue, and there is no indication, certainly, that it's going to require a stint in the IL. Vladdy generally doesn't get hurt. We've talked about that, how he and Bo, usually you can put him in the lineup every day, which is something I we try to talk about it in this show because I do like that old line, your best ability is availability. But Kevin, what would you be looking for? Because it's pretty clear that it was Vladdy who approached the Jays. And I'm not criticizing Vladdy, but I'm saying it was Vladdy who approached the Jays and said, hey, there's discomfort in this wrist. What would you be looking for from him that would suggest to you that he's either favoring it in terms of a swing, that he's either favoring it or that it's something more serious than what we're being told it is?
Yeah, I have had things, tendonitis in my wrist before, and it was takes. You have a tough take where you want to swing at the very last second. You want to take in your swing. That's when you start to feel things around your wrist, around the forearm.
Yeah, when you don't make
area.
Contact, right? It's like...
Well, not really. It's more of that swing, take. But
like
my
George Springer
later,
yesterday? Okay.
And I have to take year, it. My wrists are sort of the last thing, holding my barrel back, and I think that would sort of be the one. Defensively, maybe. Maybe it's his glove hand. He's moving his hand all over the place. Maybe that would be catching balls from shortstop, third base. You know, he's a snapper sometimes, too, when he catches it, sort of showing off. Everybody wants to do that to get a little frisky when they're catching a baseball. But I think it would be more of his takes. I don't think it's so much of his finish. He's not a one-hand finish guy, which would help him here. You know, he's more of a two-hand guy where he rolls it over at the end. I don't think that would do a ton to his wrist, so I wouldn't look too much into his finish. I would think if it was anything, it would be his takes as a hitter. And I'm assuming, I would think he'd play first. But if they think he goes out and he takes some ground balls, I'm sure that's what he'll do. He'll show up early. He'll go take some ground balls. He'll see, make 100% sure that his catches from – certain positions are okay, right? The glove movement, all those things. I'm sure if it's okay, he'll play first. I don't think it sounds like it's a big deal. People I've talked to sounds like it's more precautionary than anything. It's big league for me anyway that he's grown up enough to go to the Blue Jays and go, hey, I don't feel right. You know, it's May. It's okay if I'm going to miss a game. I'd rather miss a game in May. And by the way, I'd rather miss a game when my team's playing Pittsburgh than other teams. I mean, it's true.
Oh,
it's common. It's more. I'm not saying that went into his thinking, But if you're going to miss, you're gonna do without Vladdy for a couple of games, it'd probably be better to do it against Pittsburgh than it would be the Phillies or the Braves or whoever else is coming up, because the next 35 games for them are legit. They're going to need Vladdy and everybody else to step up.
One thing we will also ask Rob Thompson about, I neglected to mention this when we were at the start of the show. Did notice a Sunday. Kyle Schwarber's been dropped from the leadoff spot down to the number five spot.
Mm-hmm.
He was in an 0-for-21 slump. He did get a home run after the move. I mean, we've talked about that. I don't know, dropping you to the fifth hole, does that change what you're
going to see?
Maybe get you less at bats.
Guys getting on base in front of Bryce. Playing the high.
Exactly. End. You know, I'm looking back at this team. Trey Turner acquisition is going to be huge by the end of the year. That's going to be huge for these guys.
Well, he does. I mean, it's already big, but it's absolutely.
He's already big, but that is
defense up the middle for a championship team is a big deal. What did we talk about with the Phillies a lot last year? At least the beginning of the season before they started going on their run was defense. Defense stunk. He's a very good defender. He sort of takes care of that. He's very athletic. There's no shift now. Moving around is a big deal. He's got a strong arm. He's an elite hitter. You know, he's had some hiccups. Maybe he's trying too hard, coming to a new team, right? You signed for big-time money. You're trying to do well. You know, Dalton Varsho said, basically, that's it, right? You're coming over. You're trying to do things sometimes maybe you're not capable of doing. Yeah, he's an elite everything. He's going to help them big time. And just so happens when you don't have Bryce, you got that guy to fill in and sort of fill in the blanks and be the catalyst for everything on both sides of the ball. Absolutely. They get fully healthy. They get Schwarber going. Their lineup is maybe top five in baseball.
Well, the Jays didn't play last night, but the Tampa Bay Rays did, and ho-hum. They beat the Baltimore Orioles. I loved MLB.com's headline on it was Rays quiet Orioles in battle of AL's best, which made me kind of Mm-hmm. You know, headlines you never thought you'd see at any point during the during the 2023 season. This was Shane McClanahan, man, at his best last night.
Yeah, he's unpredictable. Terrific. I mean, it's everything you need to know is he throws 99. He's thrown 175 changeups. He's given up 7 hits off the changeup. We talk about the velocity difference between your least hardest ball you throw and the fastball velocity. He throws 98. He'll top out at 100 occasion when he's frisky and he needs it, the extra gear, and his changeup's 84 miles an hour. Like, it's – you got the big difference, and then you got the slider that tunnels that you can throw for strikes. You can throw the back foot to a righty. I mean, lefties have a real tough time because of how hard he throws. He doesn't really go all quadrants. He'll go outer third, inner third. He likes the north and south because he throws really hard. He sort of that fastball the Tampa Bay way, right, is – if you're lefty, you throw hard, you throw the changeup off that, you got good arm speed on the changeup. He can match up against any other team's number one, plain and simple.
Both Kyle Snyder, their pitching coach, and Kevin Cash talked about this a little earlier this year about McClanahan. And I think people would be interested in getting the view of someone who played the game. But it was an interesting point. They talked about how he's finally figured out, not finally, but how one of the things that has happened this year is he's figured out how to get himself out of tough spots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as someone who played the game, what does that say to you about a pitcher? He's got the same stuff he had last year. He's healthy.
Yeah.
But both of them said that they have noticed that it doesn't take as much work for him to get out of a tough spot, like a couple of men on base. It just doesn't, the gears don't go as fast and don't need to go as long as they did last year for him to get out of that situation. I wonder if the pitch clock helps, a pitch timer helps a dude like that.
Man, I don't think so. I think it's tough. I think he has 3 elite secondary pitches. I think he throws really hard. He can locate a fastball. It's not down the middle. Outer third at 98 is outer third. I mean, it's as long as you're not throwing it down the middle, and occasionally it has a little run away from a righty too, which is not fair. And then he's got the changeup, which makes him very unpredictable with 2 strikes. You talk about that. How unpredictable can you be 0-0? If you throw 99, you really don't have to be that way. He can flip that big slow breaking ball, which makes him unpredictable 0-0. And then with 2 strikes, I have to respect the velocity, and now I have to respect the changeup. He doesn't throw the slow breaking ball because that gives a hitter a chance. Why would you do that if you don't have to? Doesn't do that. And he's got the slider. So he's got two elite, two strike pitches, plus the high octane velocity with the fastball. And oh, by the way, he's a unicorn because he's left-handed. Mm. How many lefties throw that hard? There's not many. You know, you can count them on one hand. So he's a unicorn when it comes to that. He is, again. We talk about that stuff about, do I have a guy that can match up against your best guy?
It's interesting.
They have at times, too, with him.
When you talk about the velocity, because one of the things about Yusei Kikuchi this year is Yusei Kikuchi's velo is up a bit. And I believe he's like in the top six, top seven among left-handers for velo. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the difference between him
And Shane McClanahan. Yeah.
Right?
It's another gear.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is another gear.
It's easy. He pitches at that. We talk about this all the time. It's like Jordan Romano. Why do we see 94s? When he is elite, he is pitching at 98, right? It is easy. It's 98. It's consistently. I don't have to turn around and look at the scoreboard. I know what the velocity is going to be. This is what the elite guys do. The Groms of the world. Now, he's injured. That's what they do, right? They don't have to turn around and see if it's 99. They know if everything's right mechanically and it's free and easy like Shane. It is free and easy. He ain't mustering up to hit 98 all the time or 99 or a hundo when he needs it. And then he drops the secondary pitches. That, I think, is what they're talking about as an organization that has separated him from this year to last year because his K percentage has went up, which is that looks to me like that's on purpose because the usage of the changeup, the slider, and occasionally that slow breaking ball have went up. So he's trying to punch you out. The home runs have went down because the secondary pitches have gotten better. That's why the walks have went up, right? He'll take a few more walks because he's trying to eliminate you because he knows he can keep it in the yard now because the three secondary pitches are that much better. It's as a hitter, you try and eliminate something before you walk to the plate. What do you eliminate against him? I don't want to hit the slider.
What do you look like? Is he a guy you look location or what?
How?
You it's do 98, the whole 90, four.
You can't do it in fours. Whoever can tell you that does that is lying.
You do it in.
You split it in half. I'll give you this half. I'll take this half until I get to two strikes, and then I'll choke up, widen out, close my eyes, and pray. Because that's basically what you're doing against him. These are elite guys. Marquise Grissom always used to tell me, when you face guys like this, don't change anything. Split it in half. Look in that location. Don't look for pitch. But he throws so hard that you have to sit heater.
Yeah.
And because he's so unpredictable with all the other secondary pitches, there's a reason why this guy's elite now. Hopefully he stays healthy and we can see this all year because we're baseball fans. We want to see this. I mean, 7-0, he dominates lefties. He dominates righties. The slider's elite. The velocity's elite. Location most of the time's elite. He's got something for everybody. He can steal a strike with the slow breaking ball. He can eliminate both sides with the changeup because that's an elite arm speed pitch. Now you just do Rays, what everybody else has done against him.
The Rays could get their 30th win of the year
tonight. That's crazy.
On May 10th.
That's crazy.
30 wins on May 10th.
They hit a lot of homers, too. Like, that's how you win championships for me.
I told you. They're not the little engine that couldn't anymore. They're bullies.
If we said this at the beginning of the year, and you have to be a bully in the American League East. You have to be. It helps to have Shane. But
and
how they win a championship is they obviously have really good starting pitching now, which saves their bullpen so they can abuse their pen when it comes playoff time. But you got to hit homers.
Yeah,
that's most of the time you're not going to string together a bunch of hits against good pitching. Bleeping a bomb, they do that better than anybody this year.
Although again, their bullpen innings might concern me a little bit. I just don't think they're getting Fairbanks back soon,
which will help. Like
Glasnow, they're getting
enough innings from their starters that, and everybody they call up's elite.
I was going to say they're also the Rays. You know, they'll figure it out.
They'll call somebody up who you've never heard of who will dominate people.
Or they'll make another one of those deals where Andrew Rasmussen. Remember?
Yeah.
Andrew Rasmussen.
We'll take him. Throw the slider more and we'll dominate you because throwing
hard. I swear to God, every time the Rays make a deal, I look at what follows and. I don't care what the main dude is. I look at the end.
Yeah.
Because when I see the end, I go, okay, now I got to do a deeper dive into this guy.
It's almost like, well, why haven't you thrown the slider 85% of the time? That's what it's about. Yeah. Basically that simple is somebody just walks up to their pitcher and goes, hey, throw it 75% of the time, and then they dominate with it.
The back leg line is open, 416-413-3959. What are your expectations for Alek Manoah tonight? What are your thoughts on Bryce Harper and what we're what we may be seeing in this series with Bryce Harper returning from that surgery? Questions, criticism, comments for Barker, 416-413-3959. We'll get to it in the second hour. We will have Blue Jays trivia. We've got tickets to give away, and at 11, Kylie McDaniel, ESPN MLB insider, will join us. Fascinating piece on ESPN where he spoke to 26 insiders around baseball, executives, managers, and asked them a simple question. Where does Ohtani go, and what is he expected to earn? The answers, as you might expect, were wide-ranging. And the numbers were really, really, really
not
big.
Not for where he's going, though. It's not, is it?
There
it's
seems to be, I mean, New
is
York.
Is there a third team?
New York and California seems to be the focus. Yeah. That seems to be the focus. I think there's, you know, there's an idea. A team like Texas or Seattle may always step up. Again, Texas doesn't have, you know, state income. I mean, all that stuff. They don't have state income tax. Everybody seems to think that his predisposition would be towards California. I just don't know. I don't know how in God's name the Mets would make. I mean, I guess they're the Mets. It doesn't matter. Although if I'm Shohei Ohtani, do
Why
I really
go to the Mets? I wouldn't go to the Mets if I were him.
If you gave me a choice between the two New York teams, I'm going to the Yankees before I go to the Mets.
I almost said neither.
But if you're giving me the choice of any place else, I'm going to San Francisco. But that's just me.
Oh, really?
Anyhow, Kylie McDaniel will join us. Woo. Rob Thompson, manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, the pride of Corunna, Ontario, will join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
.640 is the first pitch tonight. The Jays open a brief two-game series against the Philadelphia Phillies. Alek Manoah on the mound against Aaron Nola. Again, a 6:40 pitch. Tomorrow, 4:05 p.m. Eastern, first pitch. Kevin Gausman takes on Zach Wheeler. Pretty good pitching matchups. For a two-game series, you get two matchups like that. Phillies, the pitching numbers really surprising this year. I don't know if that has a lot to do with the fact that extra baseball from going to the World Series. I know you always
say that.
You always think that I make kind of too big a deal about that.
But that might make sense.
But, Rob Thompson is the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. He is, of course, the pride of Corunna, Ontario. He's the perfect person to ask because
he,
in addition to managing a team that went to the World Series last year, he also was a longtime coach for the Yankees. The Yankees play a lot of games, a lot of postseason games, and his responsibility with the Yankees was helping set up spring training the next year. So we'll talk to him about what it takes to get a team that's played those extra games ready for a regular season. But we've got a lot of other things to talk to Rob Thompson about, and we're very pleased that he joins us in Blair and Barker. Rob, thanks so much for joining Kevin and myself. We trust you're keeping well, and I know the early season's been a bit of an up-and-down thing, but there's a lot of that going on in baseball, I guess, unless your name's Kevin Cash right now.
that's right. Thanks for having me, but more importantly, we need a Leaf win tomorrow night.
Ooh. Yeah, well, there you go.
And we'll be good.
Yeah, it's... I don't know if I like the chances.
Remember now, I was the extra coach on the 04 Yankee team that Boston came back and
beat
us 4-3. So it can be done. Ooh. It can be done. Trust me.
Yes, it can be done. And there are everybody in the control room over here right now. You just made them smile for the first time today because it's been black, pretty much black gray paper around this building for the past couple of days. Rob, like, Bryce Harper, you know, it's funny, when Bryce Harper came into the game, I remember reading a lot of the stuff on him. Sports Illustrated did a big cover story on him, and he got the idea that this guy might be kind of a coddled guy, you know, his parents took care of him and all this stuff, and they spent a lot of money getting him ready, et cetera, et cetera. The dude is, He's coming back from Tommy John surgery way before anybody else thought he would. Yes, I understand he's not a pitcher, but he's still got to swing the bat. Like, how, as someone who's been around for a while, how surprised are you that he's able to do this? And, I mean, what, he's 6-for-17, 6-for-19, he's got a home run, 7-for-19 maybe? This is something that I don't think is supposed to happen, is it?
Yeah, it's a little surprising. I agree with you, but not completely surprising, because I know just how much he cares and how hard he works, and I know how good our training staff is, and his DNA is so good. I mean, he's a quick healer. Actually, we were playing Toronto the first year we signed. We had Bryce. We were playing his first spring training game, his first at bat. He gets hit in the right ankle by a 96 mile an hour fastball, and
Trent Thornton. I remember that.
He told me after the game. He said, "I don't bruise and I don't swell." And I thought, okay, well, we'll see about tomorrow. And I came in the next day, and no bruising. There wasn't a mark on him, and no swelling. So he just got one of those bodies that just heals quickly. So, but it is remarkable, nonetheless.
Rob, when did you get an idea? Like, how did he show up in spring training and say, this is the date I'm aiming for? And or when did you kind of get an idea that we might be seeing this guy back, you know, the second week of May?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the date was. It wasn't spring training, though. It might have been like the first week of the season when he started to really turn it loose, you know, in the cages. And you could see the bat speed. You could see that, like, there was no hesitation. There was no change in his swing. And I was like, okay, this might be coming quicker than we thought. But we still had to get clearance from his doctor who did the surgery just so that he could slide, because he's a head-first slide guy. In the heat of the moment. And once we got clearance from that, I mean, it was full go. So pretty remarkable, really.
Rob, is that contagious whenever a player around him sees, you know, no spring training, he hasn't had a lot of at-bats, obviously, he hasn't seen live pitching. Well, he's seen some in those simulated games you were talking about, but it's not, you know, when the heart rate goes up like it is when you're in a lineup. And then I saw him, I think the other day, he hit a double down the left field line. It might have been off a left-handed pitcher. He's super wide. I played with Bryce. I don't ever remember him lower half-wise being as wide as he was. Is that contagious? Like, do other players go, well, heck, if he can do it with what he's been through, I should be doing it?
Yeah, I think so. He sets a great example, and he comes to play every day, and he plays hard every day, and I think, coming back as quick as he did shows how much he cares. And I think other players feed off of that. And, you know, he does that wide base that he has. He goes to that in his two strike approach. I don't think he ever did it when he was young, but he's doing it now, and it's really effective. But yeah, I think it's contagious. I think players, you know, they grab onto that type of thing, how much he cares and how hard he plays. And, you know, it's infectious.
Rob, it always used to amaze me that when you looked at the games played for a lot of the New York Yankees players who were on those teams that were going on those extended postseason runs, you know, when their career's over, you look at Jeter, I think he's got a season and a half of extra games just in the playoffs or something like that. I know that you coached in some of those Yankees teams. I know that you ran spring training. Do you have to change spring training, or do you have to be cognizant when spring training opens of the fact that, for example, this year you are managing a team that went to the World Series, that played baseball for a month longer than everybody else? Do you have to change things as a result of that? Or do you try to just do things the way you would normally do it and just kind of hope your players are honest with you when they say, hey, I need a day?
Yeah, we've ran it both ways, where we're really super cautious and build up the pitcher slowly. And we've done it the other way, where we just treat spring training normally because pitchers need to pitch. And I find that if you do it the latter, where you're treating spring training just like a normal spring training, you get better results. But you do have to monitor every player more than normal because of the short off season. But I think you got to treat them, you know, they're like racehorses. You just got to treat them normally and just keep an eye on them.
Rob, I want to ask you about Nick Castellanos, but I want to ask about a new player like him coming over last year and maybe trying too hard. Signed a big deal. Is there something to that? I never signed a big deal. I was never fortunate enough to do that, so I can't answer to this. But you've been around. You've been around a lot of players that have, though. Is there something to that? Because he's having a really good start to his season. Is it something like that, that he was just trying too hard, trying to impress? Or has he made a mechanical change that's helped him?
Well, I think a combination of the two, because I think a lot of players that do sign big contracts, you know, they want to come in, they want to impress, they want to do well in front of their new teammates and their new fan base. And when they get off to a little bit of a slow start, it becomes a confidence thing, and it's just kind of a snowball rolling downhill. But and Nick had a lot of things. You know, he had a new baby last year at the start of the year. There were just a lot of things going on. But there is a mechanical adjustment that he's made. Kay Long, our hitting coach, who's one of the best in the game, if not the best, he spread him out a little bit. He's getting him to stay on his backside, getting him to keep his head still and let the ball travel and not go out and get it and run out of bat. So, and drive the ball the other way. Because when Nick's good, he's a right center field approach guy. And when he's doing that, he's really effective. And that's what he's doing right now.
One of the things that I noticed on the weekend, and I think it was just, it may have just been done Saturday. If it was done Sunday, then you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I saw that Kyle Schwarber was down in the middle of the order as opposed to at the top. Is that just something to get Kyle going, give him a different look, or what was the reasoning behind that? Not that I'm second guessing it, because because he hit a home run, I think.
No, I had. When we knew we were getting Harp back, I knew that DH spot was going to be taken by Harp. So that meant that Schwarb and Castellanos would be playing the outfield every day, and so all these guys are in the lineup, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, who's going to lead off. And I was balancing back and forth between Stott and Schwarber. And so for the first few games when Harp was back, I ended up going with Schwarb. That's what we did last year, and we had a lot of success with it. And Kyle usually, he feels very comfortable in that leadoff spot. So, we'll go with that. And if it doesn't work, you know, after a week or so, then we can always switch it back. And so both him and Stotter were kind of struggling with, you know, Schwarber was in the one and Stotter was in the five. And so we just flipped him for the Sunday game. And, you know, Stotter has an 11 pitch at bat and gets a base hit. He's getting on base, and Schwarber gets three hits and hits a home run. So it just, you know, it's probably coincidence, but it just, you know, it sort of got everybody going. So we'll stick with this for the time being. And if we need to make a move, then we'll do it.
Rob, early in the season, is there one thing with a pitcher that you look at that you may worry about? Would it be break? Would it be location or velocity? If you're sitting over there on the bench and you're going, oh, I'm worried about that part of his game, which one would it be?
Well, I think if it's a power guy, I think it's velocity that I'd be worried about. If he's a 96, 97 guy, and now he's all of a sudden he's 93, 94, I go, okay, maybe there's something wrong. But if he's a finesse guy, a command guy, and he doesn't have his command, then I'd worry a little bit about that. So I think it just depends on the guy, on the individual.
Well, the reason why I asked that is I was looking up Aaron Nola because he's starting tonight. His velocity on his sinker and his four-seamer are down a mile per hour, I think it is. Is that a worry just when it's down, you know, a little bit of a tick and not so much, or is it more break? Is there something you see with Aaron?
I think in Aaron's case, because I've been asked about it a lot, I don't worry about him because I know he's healthy. I think the velocity will, you know, some guys, they start off the season, their velocity is down and they just gain a little bit as the season goes on. And that's kind of who Aaron is. And even if he didn't gain that velocity back, he can command the baseball so well. And he's got a lot of different weapons that he can still pitch and win games and be super, be very effective, even if the velocity is down. So that doesn't really bother me that much.
Last question from us, and then we'll let you go. Trey Turner, obviously one of the game's big players, a guy who changes every lineup. But, man, he just seems to fit your lineup like like a glove. He'd fit anywhere, but it really does seem to fit in with your lineup, doesn't he?
Yeah, he really does. You know, he's hitting in the two hole right now. And, you know, he's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start. And he might be going through a little bit of what Caffey went through last year. I don't know. He's working through it. He had he's showing signs of coming out of this little minor slump that he's been in and showing the signs of what we saw last year in his career to make us sign him. So he fits perfect because he's got the speed. He can play defense, gets on base. He's got power. He's a good guy, and he fits in the clubhouse perfectly. So it's a great sign. He's going to have a great year.
Rob, we're going to let you scoot. Yeah. Thanks for doing
great
this,
stuff.
Man. Best of luck.
Thank
Be well.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys, and go Leafs.
Take care. That's Rob Thompson, manager of the Philadelphia Phillies from Corona, Ontario.
That's awesome.
There you go.
I just wonder about that. I wonder, you know, it's sort of people roll their eyes when you sign a big deal and they say you're trying too hard.
I'm one of those people.
I do think there is a little something to that, right? You get off to a slow start. People expect you just to blow it, right? Just to come in and hit the ground running. And sometimes it doesn't. And then you try and do too much on top of too much. And then it just sort of gets out of hand. So, you know, I think there's some. And then you're trying to do it in Philly, which can't be the easiest place to do that, right? It might be the toughest place to play in baseball when it just comes to fans and struggling and the booing part of it. So
that point is,
can't be the easiest thing, I would assume.
That point is really well made. And it's not just the fans. Now this is a guy who broke in with the Tigers, Nick Castellanos, played 151 games with the Cubs in 2019, went to Cincinnati and then went on to Philadelphia. And I generally don't, I mean, yes, the history's full of dudes in every sport who signed a big contract and stunk. Hello, Russell Wilson. I mean, it happened.
Thank you for bringing that up.
It's no problem.
My favorite.
It's no problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does happen in every sport. But what I think is a factor with Castellanos is Philadelphia remains. It's not just the fan base. It remains a really voracious media market. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of, now there's not as much as there used to be, obviously, because newspapers are not as healthy as they used to be. But it's a big sports media market. There is a constant, there's a 24/7 sports news cycle in Philadelphia that you don't get in those other cities, not to the same degree at least. And I think that more than anything else contributes to guys. Like I'm a firm believer that when you come from a small media market mm-hmm. where you may have one beat guy, two beat guys, mm-hmm. Where you, frankly, you can go, even if you're a star player, you can go two or three days without necessarily being exactly asked a question.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if you are 0-for-21, here comes the beat guy from one of the Cincinnati papers who's going to chat with you about it and interview. Well, it's a lot better. It's easier if you're talking one-on-one with a guy and,
sure.
you know, and he's a beat guy, you trust him, I'd be off the record. I mean, my elbow, I mean, I stink, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
It really is different. And Castellanos went into Philadelphia at the age of 30. So he basically spent the first 10 years of his career in Chicago. Chicago Cubs are not media market.
Easier.
Yeah. Philly, though? Now that's you got tough. A bunch of dudes talking
to you. They pile
it
on. Rob just told you there. It's not just that with the wider stance and trying to hit the ball to all the fields, you know, allows him to lay off the breaking ball a little bit better, catch up to velocity a little bit more. The straight up and down thing's not the easiest thing to do. I said this to you a lot of the times with Whit Merrifield, right?
It's
the stride foot.
I think Brandon Belt, was Belt the guy you were talking about standing straight up and down too? Or?
Yeah, not really. No, he's
or
more.
It was Whit.
It was Whit a little bit right. more. That's because your eyes are a little bit further away from the strike zone. You tend to chase up and down a little bit more because of that reason. Widening out, get your eyes a little closer, allows you to, you know, just know where the strike zone's at a little easier. and you can force the barrel to the ball a little bit better that way. So they're telling you that it wasn't just that. But when you get off to a slow start, when you signed a bunch of money and you're expected to help carry a baseball team, yeah. I'm not saying he didn't deserve it.
Well, I looked at that lineup, and that's why, again, I asked Rob this. Obviously, I know it's a captain, obviously. And you put Trey Turner in every lineup, he's going to be good. But I looked at that Phillies lineup, and the thing he brings to that lineup, the length of that lineup when he's in there, and now that Bryce Harper's back, Kyle Schwarber, and Bryson Stott, yeah. A guy we didn't talk about, but Bryson Stott had a nice start to the year. Now he's leveling out a bit. But he's had a nice start to the year as well. And then JT Realmuto, that's a really good
there's
lineup.
There's a handful of hitters in baseball who can hit a number one's best pitch. He's one of them.
Trey Turner.
He's one of them. Name those guys
in
the Jays lineup.
And you can put him anywhere.
Name those guys in the Jays lineup.
Oh.
Springer in October. I'll say the playoffs.
Bo
for sure. Who else?
When he's on, Vladdy, but when he's on. You're asking me if my life depended on it.
Plate awareness with Vladdy, an elite pitcher. Yeah,
and my life depended on it?
Bo
and Springer in October.
So it's a handful, basically. Right? It's a couple of guys, right? Those don't grow on trees. Trey Turner, when he's raring and ready to go, everything's working the way it's supposed to be working.
And you can lead him off if you want. You can hit him second. You can hit him third. You're not going to lose.
You can do some things with him. So they got a lot better. They got better defensively too, which is a big deal for their team, right? They're not a very good defensive team.
Do you think that Aaron Nola, do you think the contractual situation would wane a guy like that?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I'm sure everyone
handles
that in
different
ways. Is it
Nola or Wheeler who's a free agent next year? Good question. I've often wondered if that.
I think Wheeler has a couple more years left.
Yeah, I think you're right. Nola. I think it's Nola.
Yeah.
I've often wondered about that with guys.
Sure, everybody handles that in different ways. It's doing it in Philly again too. It's not the easiest thing. You want to get off to a hot start. Where your team went last year, you were a big part of that. Now you're trying to show them that you can do it again. Aaron Nola was their number one in the playoffs last year.
Yeah,
it wasn't Zach Wheeler. It was Nola. So, you're trying to back that up. It's the it's the velocity kind of thing. It's down a little bit, and he has to answer these questions. A little bit more, I think, doing it in Philly than he would in other markets. And, that for sure weighing on some things. And now you want to go out and do it so you don't have to answer the question. They got a good team. You got to play well against them. Like, Jay's lineup today is going to have to do something. They're going to have to lay off the breaking ball. They're going to have to hit the heater. They're going to have to be aggressive in the strike zone against Nola to beat them.
It should be this should be a heck of a series. This should be a fun.
Because
it should be a fun series.
All four guys that are throwing are coming off a start that they didn't really like.
Yeah.
So now they're going to make adjustments, and now it's up to the lineups to counter.
Yeah. No, I think it. Got the makings of a really good series. Again, 6:40 p.m. is the first pitch tonight. Tomorrow, it's an odd starting time. Tomorrow is a 4:05 Eastern time first pitch. You can see it on Sportsnet and, of course, hear it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The back leg line is open. Our number is 416-413-3959. You can leave questions, comments for Kevin Barker. Maybe, as I said, maybe you want to talk about about Bryce Harper and take a look ahead to the Phillies series. Maybe you have questions about Shohei Ohtani. Well, Kylie McDaniel did. He's ESPN's MLB insider. He asked 26 baseball insiders around baseball where they think Ohtani will go and how much money he'll make. The answer seems to be California or New York and a crap ton of money. Kylie McDaniel's next. Blue Jays tickets. Back leg line as well. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. If you're watching us on TV, you are on Sportsnet 360. Hello, Mom. And wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Breaking down the biggest stories in Toronto sports.
The Fan Morning Show with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, this one's easy. Boys will let me down. We'll give away tickets later on in the show to see the Jays and Astros. Whoa! June 6th.
Do you think the boys like you?
I don't care. You should know by now. You should know by now that being liked is not big on my list of things.
You're all talk.
Respected and feared.
You want a hug?
Respected
every
and
once
feared
in a while.
are the first two.
Oh, you're feared.
I don't
you
care
are
about
feared.
The other stuff.
You're a presence for sure.
A present, all right. Yeah.
Yeah. You are.
Yeah. Hey, Alec Manoa's whip this year is 1.65.
What?
His whip is 1.65.
Is it?
Yeesh.
Get that slider working. He'll be fine.
I didn't realize that. I got to look at that.
I just told you every stat. That
I know,
had,
but
that
I,
has.
I didn't.
You weren't listening?
I didn't.
You don't listen to me?
I didn't look at whip. That's old. Whip is old. I don't even look at that part.
We don't talk whip on this show.
No, I don't even look at that part.
People
of
are like whip.
I don't even.
How
look,
do you spell
that? I don't even look at that part of the baseball reference thing anymore.
You know,
whip is old school. Jesus, I can remember when people first started talking about war and the reaction from some of the members of the baseball media, the older members. I was fine with it.
Adapt
I'm fine.
And overcome, Jeff.
No. I'm fine with analytics. You're the one that has the problem with
That's
analytics.
That's not true.
I just like,
that is not true.
I just like sort of playing along with you and poking the bear.
I say don't abuse it. That's what it is. I don't mind anyhow.
We've got Jay's tickets. We'll give them away in a few minutes. 416-413-3959 is the back leg line. This article caught our attention. Actually, it was our producer, Mark Boffo. I'm going to give him credit, who brought it to my attention, because obviously one of the storylines we're following going into this year was Shohei Ohtani and you know, kind of where he's going to end up. And I've been of the opinion that if you're the Angels, you keep him for the rest of the year, just almost understanding that he's going to go. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to get anything of value, not of value. You're never going to get anything of equivalent value for Shohei Ohtani in a trade, I don't think. The question is, where does he end up next year? Kylie McDaniel is MLB insider with ESPN. He joins us in Blair and Barker. Kylie, thanks so much for taking time out to join us today. It seems, look, I've been, and maybe this is because I'm kind of a closet Giants fan, and I've been a Giants fan since I was, you know, younger. They're one of my favorite teams. I looked at what the Giants have done in recent years. The money they've tried to spend on free agents, right? The money they've tried to give away. And I've kind of thought that they might be the destination for Ohtani. Now, you talked to 26 insiders to find out where he was going to go. Do they factor in this picture at all, or does it simply come down to your way of thinking and their way of thinking, Yankees, Mets, or Dodgers?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I think the Giants are one of the teams in the mix for sure. I know from talking to people, obviously no one is, you know, inside Ohtani's head that I talk to. There's, you know, a handful of people to probably have an idea of what he wants to do. But the thought from everyone around the league was essentially the same thing, which was, you know, Yankees, Mets, maybe Red Sox, maybe Cubs, maybe Rangers, some of these middle of the country East Coast teams will come after him. And people think the Mets will be the most aggressive in that regard, but that similar to the first time Ohtani was a free agent, that he wants to stay on the West Coast. That's his priority. He'll listen to everyone else, but he wants to stay on the West Coast. And while the, you know, Dodgers seem to be the best organization with probably the most money to spend as they're resetting their cap this year, that you also obviously have the Angels will be on them. The Mariners make a lot of sense. The Giants make some sense. Oakland obviously does not. San Diego will be very aggressive. Like, I think everyone thinks he'll land with one of those teams and the Dodgers just make the most sense. But I would imagine if we're fast forwarding to the end of this and let's say Ohtani has all the offers and all that kind of thing and he's down to a final five, I bet three or four of them are on the West Coast. So I would say the Giants are, you know, one of those West Coast teams that makes sense. But given the way they've operated themselves under Farhan Zaidi in the last couple off seasons, they don't seem like the team that's going to win a bidding war for a top end player, because they probably would have won one of those by now.
Now, I know he's represented. I believe he's represented by CAA, so he's got a large agency behind him. But one of the things that kind of intrigues me about Shohei Ohtani is, Kylie, do we know who his I don't want to say entourage. Do we know who the decision makers are around him? Like, clearly he's going to have the final say, but is there sort of a cadre of people around him? I don't know, family member, or, you know, somebody, a business advisor from Japan or somebody like that, who helps guide his career and, you know, who may have a role in this?
Yeah, I guess we've seen that a little more in the NBA, where, you know, LeBron, everyone knows the name of his agent and like the kind of places he may want him to go, or Kawhi Leonard's, uncle that was super involved. I'm not aware of a figure like that. Obviously, he has an agent in an agency. He has some thoughts himself. I'm sure his family also has some thoughts. I don't think there is like some Svengali character that's kind of running the show here that everyone is actually trying to get a hold of. I think it's mostly Shohei. And I think, again, given the signal we got from his first free agency, everyone thinks that's where it's headed. But I would imagine the group of people that actually knows what he wants to do right now is single digit and maybe like under five. Mm-hmm. And they're not really telling anybody anything right now, because you never know. Maybe you make it seem like you don't want to go to the East Coast, and he really does. And Steve Cohen just gets, you know, run up by all the West Coast teams, and he thinks he's got to overbid by 20%. And like, maybe that's what they want. Or maybe he just wants to stay on the West Coast and he's not saying anything because he doesn't need to. Like, there's a lot of different ways to read this, and there's just not a lot leaking out of there. Whereas I feel like if we're talking about the NBA, usually every week, whether it's real or not, there is some sort of reported something, or you got to talk to this guy, or this team's making moves. And it just doesn't seem to be quite at that level of intrigue.
Do you think one of the teams that would be involved with him, because it will be a short market, I'm assuming that could spend north of $600 million. Are they buying the Ohtani that does both? Or do you think it would be one of those teams, say if it's the Dodgers, you know, it's warm weather there all year. He could probably do both longer in his career. Or would you be buying, do you think, the people that you've talked to, one of the other in, say, 2 or 3 years into that, say, 10-year deal?
So it's an interesting question. I covered that in the article, that the sort of risk factors are unique with him, because, like, most years there is a giant, you know, $200, $300 million contract. And you basically look at the most recent player in the last couple of years that signed that's similar to that guy, and then this year's version gets maybe an extra year, maybe a little more per year, maybe slightly bigger package. It's all sort of variations on the same deal. Like when Freddie Freeman hit the market, it was like, oh, he's going to start at the Goldschmidt standard and go a little above that. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, like once Manny Machado signs for 300, then like Harper's going to try to go a little above that. Like, it's all very straightforward. And when it comes to sort of projecting someone's health and sort of the risk inherent in one of these deals, it's like, oh, well, like this guy's 3 years into his 10-year deal and he's healthy, and this guy's kind of like him. Now, the problem with Ohtani is he has essentially nothing in common with any of these players, because he's doing twice as much as all of them and sort of used to be somewhat injury prone and now is not. And I know from talking to Angel sources off the record, they think that they've sort of figured out a way to handle him in sort of a, you know, sports science workload sort of way. Like, they don't think it's a coincidence that he's healthy now more regularly and can handle a little more of a workload. They think they figured some stuff out. And obviously, like, Ohtani is aware of that and will probably bring some measure of that knowledge with him. So the thought would be it's higher risk, especially later in his career, that he will get injured, just because that happens as you get older. But there's no comps to look at, and he seems to have figured it out at some level, in much the same way that Aaron Judge used to be injured a lot and was unique in terms of the size and has been healthy for a while. So the real question is, as you get to, like, you know, 34, 35, 36, where, like, whatever is going well for him right now durability wise kind of breaks down, are you then relying more on, well, he's going to do one more than the other, and we're really getting a lot of marketing costs, and we might be losing a little money on the back end of this deal, but we're making it on the front end? Like, all of that is sort of an uncharted territory. So, like, what you're saying could certainly be an option, and that's where I think the fact that he's so good at both and is splitting his time, you would think if he focused on one, he would be better. You've got all the sort of marketing and sponsorship stuff that comes with it. You're just sort of, you like the mix of all the stuff you're getting, and 6 years from now, you don't really know what you're going to have.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, we had Joe Maddon on during spring training, and we were asking him about Ohtani. He said, look, you almost have to negotiate two separate contracts for him. And I don't know how you go about doing it, whether you try to put wording in that the pitching part of the contract becomes vested if he makes, I just don't want to. I don't want to be the lawyer that has to go through the final document and try to sign off on every paragraph. But the one thing Joe didn't talk about, you just touched on it. How could you quantify the marketing kick you would get from signing Ohtani? You know, jersey sales, things of that nature, TV exposure. I mean, I would think if he goes to the Dodgers, maybe the Dodgers games are already televised in Japan, but there'd probably be a bidding war, I would think, more for Japanese TV rights with Ohtani. You get into streaming and all this stuff. Can you possibly quantify what he would bring to an organization in terms of that external financial impact?
I haven't done a deep dive on that specifically. I can't tell you if, like, when, you know, the day he signs, is some article going to come out and say that he's worth $30 million every year to the Dodgers and he's worth, you know, $100 million to the bottom line of the team if they were to sell it. And, like, I don't know what that number is. But if almost everyone I talk to obviously includes agents and front office people because they knew they were going to be quoted, because, like, some of these guys work for teams that are trying to sign this guy. So they also don't want to be, like, quoted publicly saying this. But they all said, like, oh, if you're ever going to make a case that someone is actually worth an amount of money to your team if he doesn't play a game that year, this is the only guy that you can actually make that case with. And we know that, like, your outfield wall will have some Japanese language stuff on it. And, like, your TV rights go up. And if you get him with, like, a, you know, an opt-out after 3 years on his deal, you can't do as much sponsorship stuff because you might not be there in 3 years. But if you get him locked up for 12 years, all of a sudden you get, like, probably, like, you know, 2 5- or 6-year deals worth of, you know, sponsorships and suites and season tickets and media rights and your outfield wall and all the different stuff that he does, that he's, you know, wearing your uniform during the commercial and, like, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's a real amount of money. And I don't know if that is factored in as if he doesn't play a game for us this year, he's worth $3 million or he's worth $10 million. But, like, it's a real amount of money, and it's a thing that no other team does with any other player, because for everyone else, it's like, does he sell more jerseys? Yeah. Do we see that money, or does it go into the MLB fund? It's sort of like, are we actually selling tickets, or does it just seem like people care more? Are we actually getting a kick in our TV deal? Or, you know, are we just getting a couple more guys watching this year when he'll be gone? Like, he has that as a factor, and almost no one else has it. And that's, again, I mentioned the sort of concept of these basketball stars that carry the franchise in terms of value. Like, you sign LeBron and the value of the team goes up, you know, 20%. Like, he's one of those transformational guys.
It's interesting, the article. The average for people who, just to give people an idea, when you looked at the 26 insiders, when you asked them for average length and for dollar figures, the average length you get is 11 years. The total guarantee, again, this is the average, is $524.3 million. The AAV is 47.5. But you also asked another question. It's something Kevin and I talked about. $60 million per year versus $60 million total, the dilemma only Ohtani could face. Could you, again, we can't get into his mind, but, you know, if signals get out there that he is looking for a short-term deal, like if I'm the Blue Jays and I can get Shohei Ohtani for $60 million a year at 4 years, I got to be about that.
No question.
Right? I mean, almost any team. I mean, if I'm the Cubs, I got to be about that. I might even go 65 or 70 for 4 years.
Yeah, no, there was a quote that I put in there where a front office person said that he thinks he's two $35 million a year players. But notice that nobody put an AAV, even on a short-term deal, of $70 million because you take a slight – you take a slight discount because if he gets hurt, then you're missing two guys. And so that extra value you get, and what if he's, you know, hurt during the playoffs? Then, like, the whole season was sort of contingent on him being there at the right time, and he's not. So you get a little bit of a discount when you do that. And the funny thing is, I think the lowest prediction was somebody thought he'd go 4x60, which you can see someone thinking that might, if he's trying to maximize career earnings. But then he'd be hitting free agency at 32 as a guy where everyone's going to think, whether he's been durable 4 years in a row or not, he's not going to be going forward. Yeah. And so I think the most viable version of that, because you guys are saying, hey, $60 million a year for a shorter term deal. Of course. It's like, yeah, I think 20 teams would do that. I think Tampa Bay might do that.
Yes, they might. Yes.
Freddie Freeman over $100 million. Like, they're not against doing this if it's the right player. And, like, that sure seems like the right player if you're going to do it. So the interesting thing I thought was, because some of these short term deals were like, hey, 4 or 5 years at $60 million. And then tack on some player options at 30. So in case he gets hurt, you know, he gets a big top line number, he can opt back in and get all that money. And then some people thought he'd get 12 years times $60 million or 10 years times $60 million. And I was like, oh, so, like, it's not necessarily short-term deal at 60 or 65 a year. It's like maybe long-term deal at 60, 65 a year, which makes it, that's kind of easier on everybody. So long as it's not like, say, a city that Ohtani doesn't want to play in, like, then that becomes a bit of a, well, maybe I want to hit the market again and try to, like, really nail this thing and maximize my lifetime earnings and be able to switch teams if I want. But, it, like, let's say, for instance, he wants to play for the Dodgers, like everyone kind of thinks, and they offer him 10 times 60, like, that makes it a pretty easy solution for everybody. Like, yeah. That's a nice round number. Like, you set a precedent, you get a player, you can do all your sponsorship stuff. It's long-term. It's a city he's familiar with. Like, that seems clean for everyone. But, you know, if I know how baseball free agency goes, it's not going to be that clean. It's going to be a little more complicated. He's going to have some tougher decisions to make.
Kylie, do we know if he cares about numbers? Does he care if he has a career, I don't know, 2.5 ERA, or he strikes out however many batters, or he hits 350 homers? Because if you're trying to guess on where he might go, that might be an interesting thing to know about him.
I don't get the impression he cares about that, because also the context in which he came over, he could have waited, I think it was 2 more years, and he would have, his initial contract would have been $100 million mm-hmm. or maybe 200. And he came over when he wanted to, the first time that, like, he was sort of contractually allowed to leave because he wanted to come to the big leagues, and that was his dream. And he signed for, I think it was $2.5 million or 3.5 or whatever was left under the international signing pool that he was subject to. So, I mean, that shows you that, like, maybe he was thinking this is the best way to get to the big money in my second contract, but also it's not like he wouldn't get 500 mil 2 years from now, and he could have gotten an extra 100 on the front end. So that's just kind of, and then also, like, could have gotten a little bit more if he signed with some of the teams not on the West Coast that had a little more pool space. So obviously smaller amounts of money, but, like, he went with what he wanted to do at the time he wanted to do it, and just sort of took what was available from where he felt like going. So, and I've never heard him say, like, I'd like to win, you know, 20 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, this season's a failure. So it seems like he wants to sort of, you know, if we were speaking more millennial terms, like, he wants to do what he feels like doing and do it to the best of his ability and do it in a place he wants to do it, as opposed to, like, Bryce Harper, I think, was maybe a little more focused on with his agent, Scott Boras. Let's get a big number. Let's get the biggest draft bonus of all time. Let's do an unprecedented thing and, like, skip my last year of high school and go to junior college. Let's get the longest deal and all that sort of stuff. Like, I don't think Ohtani is motivated by that as much. Mm.
Kylie McDaniel of ESPN joins us on Blair and Barker. You wrote a feature last year on Brandon Barriera, and you know, I reading the feature on him, he'll make his second start for the Jays. What did I say? Tomorrow? Yeah. He makes a second start tomorrow with the Dunedin Blue Jays. And it was interesting reading your article because, I mean, obviously this is a guy who, you know, and we're seeing this a lot in the NFL now where guys kind of shut down and decide, I'm not going to go to a bunch of showcases. This guy basically, I think, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, basically decided he wasn't going to pitch. You know, that he'd show in scouts what he was going to show him, and they're going to have to take, you know, you're going to have to take what you already have is when you drafted him. And it interested me because, you know, one of the stories, and I'm sure you know this about Bo Bichette, was, you know, there were a lot of people, and Dante's talked about this, that he said, we made it clear to teams that, you know, Bo does things at the plate, Bo's approach at the plate, his mechanics at the plate, those aren't things you would teach a kid. But that's Bo. That's the way he does it. And we would kind of like an organization to look at Bo and not say that we got to bring this kid in and completely break him down and build it up all over again. And the Jays were one organization that said, okay, we'll work this. You know, we'll see. We'll work with you guys. And I'm wondering if maybe there's something similar with Barriera here. Just the idea that not afraid to take a look at a guy who was doing something out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I've noticed some interesting things around that idea. Like one that I found interesting is that when I was asking around before the draft, like, is your team sort of on Barriera or not? Which, you know, teams don't usually mind telling me, like, is he on the board and you're thinking about taking him, or right. Is he just sort of out of your thinking? And more teams that I would have guessed were just like, high school pitcher, we're not always nuts about that in the first round, you know, not really our risk profile. And there were a couple teams where I don't think necessarily the GM or the decision maker felt that way, but some of, like, the cross checkers, maybe even directors, were like, I don't love that he sat out those games, and, like, I get that, you know, makes sense for him, and if it was my kid, maybe I didn't even want to do that. But, like, I don't know if I want to take that guy, sort of wonder if the first guy to do this has the mentality I want on the mound and all that. You know, you can imagine that sort of line of thinking. And then once I was doing my top 100 of, like, the minor league guys in the offseason, teams were telling me with no additional information, like, he hadn't pitched in pro ball at this point, that he should be on my top 100 in all of the minor leagues, which would have implied that he was the top 7 or 8 player in the whole draft. having done nothing else. And I started asking guys on the pro side, like, all right, why do you think he's up this high? And then he lasted this long in the draft. And he was like, you know, the sort of answer was, well, he's got like extremely standout traits. It's like 4+ pitches from a left-hander that like throws hard and he's durable and, you know, all these sorts of things. And all that to say, once you get to the pro side and you're just a guy in the minor league throwing hard, striking guys out, all of a sudden, all that stuff washes away. And nobody really cares about it anymore. And I would imagine he's on, you know, some sort of innings limit with the Jays, that they're starting him late and, you know, keeping shorter stints. And then I think next year is when they really let him loose. And maybe he gets up close to, you know, 100 innings or something like that. But to answer your question, I think similar to the NFL draft, when this first started happening, when guys make those decisions that are good for themselves, some of the old school guys and the people that are not really used to this as a decision players can make don't really like it. And then all of a sudden, about 8 months later, nobody cares at all. It doesn't make any difference at all. Yeah. And like Bo Bichette, it's like, I was in the draft room with the Braves that year. Him and Kyle Lewis were all both in that draft. And that was sort of early in the era when that Jose Bautista, Josh Donaldson swing was becoming in vogue in the big leagues, but it had not filtered all the way down to the draft yet. And we're looking at Kyle Lewis's swing and Bo Bichette's swing, and our guys are like, I don't know, it's like kind of a split room. Like, what do you do with this guy? Do we have to fix it? Are we allowed to fix it? Do we need to fix it? And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, everyone's drafting guys like that. And you just sort of forget about it. And once Bo Bichette goes to low A and high A with Vlad Jr. and is like demolishing the league, everyone's like, oh yeah, his swing's fine now. And so I just feel like those things are so sort of, you know, flighty and transient that you just think a thing and then all of a sudden the guy performs and nobody cares anymore. So I just don't think it's something that'll stick with him. And I think it'll become a thing that's much more common going forward. There were some rumors this year that a couple of the top high school pitchers in this draft were going to do it. And a lot of them were in cold weather areas where they play a shortened schedule anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll kind of become the norm because it's the smart thing to do from like an investment perspective.
Yeah, just to give people a bit of a background, that Barry Arrett told scouts that he was going to make 2 more starts, then shut down for the remainder of the season to prepare for the draft. And that would have been what? That would have been his postseason. He was at American Heritage in South Florida. So it could have been as many, as you said, as many as 5 additional starts. So he's effectively skipping 1 regular season start and 5 additional starts. He stayed, he took part in team activities. I believe he played shortstop as well. But as you point out, and you went back and asked people, no amateur pitcher had ever made this specific decision. What does that say about him as a person? And I mean, his logic, you know, you have a quote, I'm doing what's best for myself. You see all the Tommy Johns this year, even for college guys, they were so close. You have to ask yourself if it's worth it. What does that say about a guy that he would take that approach?
Well, when I went down to South Florida to interview him before the draft, I wasn't really sure what kind of personality I was going to walk into. Is he going to be, again, like that Bryce Harper? Like, I have to do what's right for me. I want to get to that, you know, second payday. I want to make sure that first payday is optimized. I want to do the best I can do. And, sort, you know, that sort of robotic, I need to optimize everything approach to things. And his wasn't really that. He didn't say it, but he is buddies with Dylan Lesko, who was the best high school pitcher in that class. Mm-hmm. They were both committed to Vanderbilt and have been sort of the top 2 pitchers in their class for a long time. And I think it was 2 weeks before Brandon announced that, Lesko went down with Tommy John surgery. And if you sort of do the math, I think he lost $1 million, maybe $1.5 million in bonus money because he was drafted while rehabbing his surgery. And he said, like, yeah, you know, that kind of, you know, spooked me a little bit, you know, didn't love seeing that, like, you know, love that guy, he's my buddy. And didn't say, like, that pushed me to make the decision, but it's, like, hard to imagine that, you know, that was being thought about, and then his buddy goes down with the thing that he was scared might happen to him. And his team, like, it was, you know, possibly 5 more starts, but they weren't going to go deep in the playoffs. And he was just sort of like, all right, I got 2 or 3 starts left. Everyone's like, I personally, living in Atlanta, had seen him pitch, I think, 6 times over that year. Like, he was not hard to see, and there was not really much to gain. And he didn't want to abandon his team and not be there for like the playoff games and stuff. But he just sort of like, there's essentially nothing to gain, mm-hmm. and possibly 7 figures to lose. And maybe this is the only payday in my entire baseball career. Like, if you think of it that way, and again, think of it as your kid, it seems like an insane risk to take that could be happening. So, you know, why not just sort of secure your future? But then when you see it from a distance and you're just like, do you want your team drafting some kid that makes some decision that you don't love 100%? It's very easy to say, like, no, I don't like that. But then when you look at it from the perspective of the kid or, you know, his parents or something like that, it's like, well, yeah, that seems like the only answer. How is he the first person to ever think of this?
Last question before we let you run. I did want to ask you about the Rays. Now, you know, I was joking with Kevin that one of the headlines I saw about the game last night was, you know, A's beat Orioles in battle of AL's best. And I said to Kevin, headlines you never thought you'd see at any point in the season. They're for real, aren't they? I mean, I don't know if they're going to finish the year losing what, only having 30 or 40 losses. I tend to doubt it. But the Rays are for real, aren't they, Kylie? And I guess the bigger question is, are the Orioles for real if you're looking at the AL East?
Yeah, so this is one for, I would say, sort of people like me in general that have worked in front offices and sort of follow this stuff closely. And like when I call my friends that work in the industry, we talk about like who had a good draft last year, not, you know, guys mm-hmm. that are in their first year of the big leagues, or like who has a good process, or like, it, for instance, if you're an agent, if you get offered $300K from the Yankees and $300K from the Rockies, which one do you want to sign with? And agents have told me, I'll give the Yankees, who are good at developing high school pitchers like Barriera, if they offer me $200 and the Rockies offer me $300, I'm taking $200 from the Yankees because they're going to do a better job of getting my guy to the big leagues and managing his workload and making his stuff better and all that sort of stuff. So in the world where you're paying very close attention to that, the Rays are the gold standard. Like, I believe there are five GMs around the league that have worked for the Rays in the past. And if you make a list of the top five GMs in baseball, I think three of them either currently work for the Rays or recently worked for the Rays. So, and then obviously just looking at teams like, you know, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Oakland, that also don't have a lot of money to spend on their payroll, but they are not making the playoffs every year. So it's like sort of evident that they have to be the best at this. And then I would say also the, not the gold standard, but maybe one of the clearest examples of how to tank and make your team better was what Jeff Luhnow did with Houston, which obviously went from embarrassing to really good to fired in disgrace, like very quickly. And Michael Eyes came from there and is perceived as sort of like the happy, nice version of that stuff. He then did it, has a very clear point of view, has really succeeded in the draft and in player development. And now these players are showing up. And I think some people that just follow the big leagues are like, oh, the Orioles, they're good. And it's like, no, they might be number two on the list of teams that everyone's trying to copy. So all that to say, these two teams being for real is real. And whether it's this year or next year, I think Baltimore might become sort of a terror in the AL East. And so if you are a team that is floundering a bit or underperforming and doesn't have a top 10 farm system in the AL East, you've got something to worry about because they've been sort of building momentum of operational excellence for a while. And now it's starting to become obvious to everybody.
Good stuff, Kylie. Yeah. Great insight. Awesome. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Kylie McDaniels, an MLB insider with ESPN, formerly worked for the Atlanta Braves. And it's interesting in Brandon Barriera. And just so again, the story is Barriera is with the Dunedin Blue Jays, decided not to pitch at the end of his high school season, still did some of the showcases. Well, he says he'd been to every showcase, every tournament I need to go to, showing everything I need to do to answer all those questions. But essentially, of course, like any sport, right, people are wondering, okay, is this a me-first guy? What, he thinks he's too big to go through the process that other guys have gone through? Kevin is a guy who was a high school player, then went to college and was drafted. Did you come close to signing out of high school?
No. I wasn't big enough. I hadn't – growth spurt wasn't there yet. I just wasn't mentally prepared to take on –
what did anybody talk to you at all?
No, I was ready to go to college. I needed it in steps.
Yeah.
High school, college, and then be drafted. Hopefully, if I was good enough in college to show what I could do. I got to be honest with you, the first time I heard what he had done, I thought that. I thought he was a little too big for himself. And then once you get to hear him talk out loud and I don't want to say tell his story, but listen and read his story, made a little bit of sense.
And you know what?
It's why he was doing it.
It's a logical extension, too, of analytics in baseball, because now you can get the Rapsodo stuff.
No question.
And you can, you know, you get your high school coach on board with you.
Oh, yeah.
You can get all the data that major league teams need. And the only thing is you're not facing John Smith from high school down the road in the state championship.
Sure.
But it's... I think you're going to end up seeing, we're seeing it in the NFL where some guys don't go to combines. We see it in the NBA where some guys don't go to combines.
Yeah.
And I think it's smart. Why risk injury?
In college football, they don't go to that either. So, which is, you know, you're trying to, your future, you're thinking more about that. Ricky Tiedemann, change anything the way the Blue Jays handle up and comers?
I mean, I don't know.
Because if you remember, it sort of sounds like the same kind of thing, right? You put him on the side. You let him figure out what he's doing in Florida.
Yeah.
Now you just—I don't want to say they're turning him loose, because that's not what they did to Ricky. But it's change anything you think?
I don't know. I thought
very individual, maybe
it is. I mean, I think this organization. You know, we've got two recent examples of this organization making it work in Manoah. What they did with Manoah, getting Manoah to the majors, having him have the type of season he did was terrific. You know, Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman that one year kind of came up together. Now, it went pear-shaped with Aaron Sanchez for reasons that we still don't understand. But I do think that if I'm the Blue Jays, I've had enough experience with Nate Pearson, with Alek Manoah, that I should be able to deal with whatever Tiedemann and Barriera are you know, want to do. And I am a big believer that if a kid and his parents want to take control of his career, more power to him. Because you know what?
I'm with you. Who cares how it sounds?
Because when his career's over, you know, it's...
Get the money while you can get it.
Absolutely.
No question.
Absolutely.
In this world, you do it while you can do it.
Absolutely. It was interesting hearing Kylie say that, though, about... And this is the thing with Bo Bichette that has always fascinated me is the Bichettes basically hurt their bargaining position by kind of saying...
We ain't changing.
Yeah, exactly.
He is who he is.
So, you know, if you're interested in him and we're not... If you want to change him, move on.
Yeah. Takes guts.
It certainly does.
Takes guts.
We've got tickets to give away to see the Jays and Astros. You got the back leg line. We'll get to that after we break. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Everything you need to know about all things Raptors. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To push the mic on button.
Boy.
Well, you did the same thing the other day.
I did not.
You did so.
Lies.
I got tickets to give away to see the Jays and Astros.
Is it too much to ask?
Down at the Rogers Center on June 6th.
Did I want Ohtani to have a career 400 homers and 2,000 strikeouts?
I don't care.
You do care.
That you want him to have it.
I do.
I have no rooting interest in that particular situation.
You will never see that again. Ever.
I'm not going to be alive when he's finished his career.
He'll do it. You are.
No,
I have faith.
No chance.
Protein shakes, you're good to go.
No chance.
Huh? You can do it. 10 years? Say he plays 10 more years. 400 big ones.
I'm 72. 2000, no chance.
2,000 strikeouts.
Not making 72. I don't care, to be honest. I mean, it'd be great.
You're lying.
No,
you are a baseball fan.
I would like him.
Who tries to act tough. Ooh, numbers don't matter. The 400 and 2,000 punch outs is a lot.
That'd be great to see. I don't want him to go to the Dodgers.
You don't?
No. I don't want him to go to the Dodgers.
Who makes sense? The Giants?
I would just assume.
All of a sudden, you're a Giants fan.
I thought
you were a Twins fan.
No, I like...
Which one is it?
I like the Twins, but the Giants are a National League team. They're my National League team, but I like the Twins are my favorite team. The Twins have always been my favorite team.
Never heard you say the Giants.
I do like the Giants. Mm. I enjoyed covering the Giants the World Series years.
It's cold there.
Oh, God. It's not as cold in that ballpark as it was. Not as cold as it was a candle stink, believe me.
Have you ever tried to hit a fastball?
Yes.
San Francisco?
Yes.
Well, I have.
Anyhow, yeah, I just think if he goes to the Dodgers, he's taking the easy way out. I would rather him go. I'd rather see him go to San Francisco or New York.
I think
or
because
Texas
of weather,
like
it depends on how long he wants to do both.
He should go to Houston.
There'll have to be a time where he says I've tapped out.
He could go
I can't
Houston.
Do both.
Kylie,
I'm only going to do one.
Now Kylie did throw one team out there. I don't know why the hell he would do it.
Well, he did it for a reason.
But it would I don't know why Ohtani would do this, but it would certainly throw a spanner in the works if he were to go to the Red Sox.
You know he's not. Oh, yeah.
I mean, he'll have 400 home runs at that place. Mm. The 400 home runs halfway through his contract. Anyhow, we've got tickets to give away to see the Jays and Astros at the Rogers Center on June 6th. We've been giving you the chance to win Jays tickets all season long. Whether you listen on the radio or on the podcast, all you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Yesterday's question and answer was, This six-time All-Star was taken by the Astros in the first round of the 1997 draft and went on to play for the Yankees, Cardinals, and Rangers after his time in Houston. The answer was Lance Berkman, which I would have gotten. Today's question to win tickets to the Jays and Astros down at the Rogers Center on June 6th is an extremely easy question, and I have to say it's below the standards, the high standards that Lance and Mark have set for themselves. I'm very disappointed in this. They don't care.
They do not.
They're worried about the Leafs. They're worried about the Leafs. Name the lefty who joined the Astros in the you done? Name the lefty who joined the Astros in the mid-2000s for three seasons in between stints as a New York Yankee. Text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Yes. Name the lefty who joined the Astros in the mid-2000s for three seasons in between stints as a New York Yankee.
Didn't he cry?
Text us the answer. 590-590.
Yeah, he did cry.
He did. I was at the news conference.
Were you really?
I was.
Did he cry a lot?
I mean, he didn't break down, but he was emotional.
Man up.
Anyhow.
I did it. Sorry about that.
I will give him credit for this.
I mean,
he was the one guy who said he did it. For the reason every one of us would have done it. Every one of us would have done it.
To get better quicker.
It wasn't hormones. It wasn't.
To hurry up and get better.
It wasn't steroids. It was human growth hormone.
And potato.
Yeah. No, it's not. Anyhow. The back leg line is 4-1. We just gave away. I mean, if you don't know the answer, if you don't know the answer, you're probably a hockey fan. 416-413-3959.
Well, at least for a couple more days.
Couple more days, yeah.
That's rude, and I apologize. I'm so sorry.
416-413-3959.
Look at those two. They hate us.
Ah, sorry.
Well, they hate you.
416.
I buy them coffee. What?
Are you done?
No, not really. It's that part of the show.
416-413-3959 is the back leg line. Your chance to question, comment, criticize. Pump Barker's tires.
Yeah, you could tell
Barker's
I need it.
Tires, whatever.
I need it.
You do. Yeah. Emma in Alberta had a question for you, Mr. Barker.
So my question is regarding Manoah and Kirk. If Manoah continues to struggle and Kirk's not really helping him out, do you think you see a catching change where Jano catches Manoah? And do you think that would be beneficial? Thanks.
Paging Dr. Jansen, you're wanted to pitching rehab.
That's a great question. I'm going to say no. I would think no to that. Basically, what you would be telling Kirky is, we don't need you anymore as a catcher.
And you know what?
If that ever happens, you can basically, just like the Cardinals.
Wilson Contreras.
You can basically say to Kirky, nah, we're good with you. You just hit whenever we tell you to hit.
And I'm not.
Because Danny's way better than you are.
Yeah.
At everything catching.
I'm not going to say this should be a factor, but have you seen what Gabriel Moreno's doing in Arizona? Defensively and offensively.
I'm going to go with you. I'm going to not care.
But my point is, if you take Alejandro Kirk away from Alec Manoah, first of all, then, I mean, Jano can't catch every day. So if you do that, you kind of open that door to, well, so are you telling us that he's not as good as you thought he was? And if he wasn't as good as you thought he was, anyhow, you don't want to go there. But I think
the game calling with every catcher, because there's 15 at work at the station, that say sometimes that Kirky has some lapses that make you wonder on why he's throwing certain things. And I think that's the advantage that Danny can give you in certain situations. But I'm going to raise my hand and ask you.
Like,
Manoah's basically a two-pitch guy. Would that have anything to do with the break on the slider and the command of it and the quality of it? If that answer to is yes, then maybe you ponder
the
that.
Problem I have with this
but
is
I say no.
Manoah strikes me as the type of guy
it's
who
a great
can get,
question.
It is a very good
it is
question.
A great question.
And it's a difficult question to answer. I think that maybe Manoah is the type of guy who can get distracted on the mound, and I'm not certain Alejandro Kirk is the guy who can think for two people. Let's go back to the back leg line. So sometimes you got to think. You got to think for the other guy.
You said that.
416-413-3959 is back. Let's go to Travis in Saskatoon.
Just calling to ask you a question about Matt Chapman's contract, I know I've been reading things saying that both sides would like to get a deal done. Obviously, it comes down to numbers, both sides. It has to work for both sides. But I'm also thinking about Bo at shortstop, and I'm just curious what you guys think, how not having Matt Chapman beside him would maybe affect him on the defensive side and maybe on the offensive side as well. Like, to me, signing Chapman makes sense, not just to have an elite third baseman, but I want to keep Bo as comfortable as possible and not giving him anything extra to think about. Maybe he thinks he has to do more on the defensive side and how it would affect him there. Like, I love Bo as a shortstop. He's the shortstop. I love what he does at the plate. And to me, I feel like signing Chapman and keeping that familiarity and keeping Bo comfortable on the defensive side of the ball is just as important as anything else. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Those went out the window when I gave Bo $33.5 million, $33.6 million net. Now we've said to you that we like you as our shortstop going forward. We think we can win a World Series with you playing shortstop. Who's playing third and second is only a bonus. Would make us a better defensive team, but we like you where you're at. What position you play? The Chapman thing, I don't see it happening.
No,
I just don't see it. He's got, this is basically Chapman's one contract.
And he's got Scott Boras. Not to say that Boras won't sign you with the Blue Jays, but Boras is going to cost you.
I just don't think they're paying.
No, and I think that, I think any chances of that happening went out the window with the start that Chapman had. The other thing about the impact on Bo, I'd be a little careful with that because let's see how a whole year without the shift impacts it, because I'm not entirely certain. Like, one of the things Chapman was so good at, Chapman could cover for Bo last year when he was in the shift. I don't know if you can do that now. I just don't. I don't know if you can do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it look, if Chapman,
I'm not sure exactly how would he cover anyway.
If Chapman does go
to balls that Bo couldn't get to,
I will say this, Kev. If Chapman does go, it's a big defensive hole in this team, and it's given the emphasis this team has placed on run prevention,
they don't have a ton of swing and miss either in their rotation, no. Which really is going to hurt them.
So they're going to need somebody.
You're going to have to change your philosophy of spinning first.
And I don't know if Addison Barger is going to be.
He's not. Maybe the third baseman's not here yet.
Thank you. I would be willing to bet that's the case. Bill in Coquitlam has a terrific question. I'm going to let you answer this because this is Bill's question is something that I've been asked a couple of times, and it's just play Bill's question.
I'd like to know what a slurve and a sweeper are.
There you go.
I was listening to the other broadcasters from the other ball games, and they got question marks above their heads also. And can you just please explain to me what the sweeper and the slurve is nowadays? New lingo, got a big question mark above my head. Thanks, guys.
It is. Well, the sweeper is obviously exactly the way it sounds. It sweeps side to side. It's more of a sidewards moving breaking ball. A slurve is like the in-between velocity of a breaking ball and a slider. It's not as hard as a slider. It's not as slow as a curveball. It's in between that. It'll give it the slurve, like it's just got a big roll to it. The sweeper is more of that sort of three-quarter arm angle where it comes out the side and it goes more, what would that be? That'd be 3 to 8 sort of sideways movement. It's a good question. It's basically what it is, right? A 3 to 8 or 4 to 8 or whatever.
3 to 8 or 4 to 9. Sweeper, 3 to 8 or 4 to 10. There you go.
Bam. Yeah. So it's more side to side would be
more
the sweeper.
Figure that out.
The slurve is sort of what Barrios throws. It's that in between the velocity of a breaking ball and a slider. And it's got not so much a late break to it than a rolly break to it. Hope I simplified that enough. How did you answer it whenever people ask you about it?
I said, I'll ask Barker.
Oh.
Sandy in Toronto.
Got a question for you. Do you think Ohtani might ask for equity ownership in his new team?
That's a great question.
Might it be offered? If not, why not? I'll wait for your answer, and thanks very much. Keep up the good work. Bye for now.
If I'm the Dodgers, why would I give him ownership of the team?
I don't know. I don't know if an active player can have ownership in
the team.
That's
a great question, too.
I don't. Now, when.
Because it's never come up. That's why.
I know there have been, and I'm racking my brain to come up with the name. I know there was, I'm sure there have been a number of players, but I know for a fact there was an NHL player who was given ownership in the owner's real estate company while he played as part. It might have been Bob Clark with the Philadelphia Flyers was given. So in other words, he wasn't given an ownership stake in the team, but he was given an ownership stake in the development company owned by the dude who owned the team. I think I could be wrong, but I have heard of situations where you do have that happen.
I would think if that ever got out that an owner let you do that, probably wouldn't be good for baseball. Would it?
Well,
because now a lot of players be wanting.
I've got to think the teams of. I'm trying to think of the NBA. I know you can, you know, players do have ownership stakes in teams in other leagues, but I don't know about your own league. And I think then you'd get into, you know, could you be a member of the Players Association while owning a share of the team? I don't know. I doubt it. But yeah, could you offer Ohtani a slice of ownership in whatever other business you've got? Yeah, there's absolutely no.
You could do that, yeah.
There's no problem there. I mean, if I own a team and I've got a real estate company, and I say to Shohei Ohtani, hey, as a sweetener, why don't I give you 20% of Jeff Blair Development Company or something like
that? If you're Ohtani and the Dodgers come to you and say you can have 2% of our company, our company's worth $5 billion, you take that.
Yeah,
but why would they do that? Like it doesn't make financial sense, and maybe they're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, that is a good question.
It is a great question.
It
would have to
God, you know what?
Have
you know,
to make sense for both sides.
You know what? Who'd be the perfect person to answer this is Samson.
Yeah, he would have.
Samson would have been the perfect person.
It's a great question, though.
You know what? It is a good question. I'm going to actually look into. Sandy, thanks for the question. I don't think you can. But I'm sure somebody's going to come up and say that there's a situation where I can't. I'm trying to think of guys who had who've taken out ownership stakes in teams, and I can't imagine that you would be able to do that. And if somebody does know of somebody, you know, you can direct me to that. But just sent me an email. Here you go. Is it about this?
It is.
A future shock. Why players can't be owners. Baseball Prospectus. Kevin Goldstein. That's 2010. But that's... Yeah, okay. No manager or player in a club shall directly or indirectly own stock or any other proprietary interest or have any financial interest in the club by which the manager... Okay. Mm. I can't imagine that's true. But it's a great question.
Why would owners
question.
Allow that to happen anyway? Why would I want a player to own half some of my...
Yeah, people need to understand that when you're talking about owning a team now, the Ottawa Senators are going to go for $1 billion. Just imagine what a good team in a good market in an important league, you know, like, I shouldn't say important league, a good team in a good market in Major League Baseball or the NBA or the NFL would go for.
A lot.
So, you know, a percentage stake in that is...
a lot.
Yeah. And that is the thing, like, you know, people were surprised when the Ottawa Senators, when they found out that the sale price is going to be around $1 billion. Don't be. That's the going rate. I mean, they're talking about an expansion team in Major League Baseball being $3 billion. I mean, that's the rate right now.
Hmm.
So, you know, all of a sudden, 2%, if you're an owner, 2% of...
$3.5 billion.
Is a crap ton of money.
It's more than 600.
Yeah, it is. That is I don't know.
Is it?
I don't know if it is. I see you're going to make me do math at 11:50.
Huh.
11:53, 24, whatever it is. So that is it for us today. A reminder, Mr. Barker and myself, we'll be doing Blue Jays talk following tonight's game. It's a 6:40 start. Tomorrow is a 4:50 start.
Yes.
So... Lance, is it 4:50 or 4:05? Bottom line is this. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk after that game, just ahead of the Leafs game. So you can join us, and we can have happy, merry, fun time before the Leafs game.
Jays
game.
Have faith.
I've got faith. Got to have faith.
Yes, you do.
For all of us here at Blair and Barker, thanks for joining us. We shall chat again tomorrow.